Bill, is that you? They're charging you for this.
Okay, so we just experienced Tisha B'Av on Sunday, but the Jewish calendar continues on, and we don't want to end, you know, we don't look at Tisha B'Av as an ending, we look at Tisha B'Av as a conclusion, and as a day just to kind of put in the past and say, you know, things are terrible, let's have despair, let's give up. It's a very difficult day, and it gives you the tendency to have despair. You look at your history and you say, we've been through so much, so many difficult, dark times, and though it's very hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel. But Tisha B'Av is supposed to be a time where you're supposed to develop a hope, not despair, a time to look towards the future. Even on Tisha B'Av itself, the custom is that we sit on the floor only until midday. Once midday comes, you're allowed to sit up on chairs again, which signifies the fact that we're anticipating redemption. That even on Tisha B'Av itself, there's a little bit of consolation. That, as the famous story goes, Rabbi Akiva, he was walking by the ruins of the temple, and he sees foxes running around on the Temple Mount. And he was there with other his colleagues, and they were all crying. You know, we see foxes running around amongst the ruins of the temple, and Rabbi Akiva starts laughing. And they say to him, "Why are you laughing?" He says, "Why are you crying?" He says, "Why are we crying? Of course we're crying. You know, there's foxes running through the ruins of the temple." They say, "Why are you laughing?" He says, "I'm laughing because when you see the prophecies of destruction are fulfilled, then you know the prophecy of redemption will also be fulfilled. Now, we know there's a prophecy that there will be wild animals running within the ruins of the temple. If God fulfills that prophecy, God is trustworthy to fulfill the prophecy of redemption as well." So we see the glimmer of hope, and the fact that the temple was destroyed, and God did fulfill His word, He will bring divine retribution upon us. So too, God will fulfill His word and bring us to Mashiach, bring us to the final redemption, the final salvation. So Tisha B'Av ends, we look towards rebuilding. We look towards the times of Mashiach, we look towards the final redemption, and we have a consolation. This week following Tisha B'Av, there's two major events. One event referred to as Shabbos Nachamu. The Shabbos following Tisha B'Av has a special name called Nachamu, named after the first words of the Haftarah. The Haftarah says, Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami. You should be comforted, my nation. Be comforted. And there's songs. There's songs for those words. Many tunes written to those words. Nachamu, Ami. But it's God says, okay, there's been destruction. You know, what's done is done. But now we look towards the future. We know that there will be redemption. We should be comforted. God did take out His wrath on us, on Jerusalem, on the land of Israel, on our nation, but God will bring us back once again. So that's one day we have this coming week of consolation, Shabbos Nachamu. Another day you have in the week following Tisha B'Av is the little-known holiday called Tu B'Av. Tu B'Av, the 15th of Av. Tu, Tes Vav, number 15 in Hebrew, Tu B'Av. Tu B'Av is a day which is not known exactly what we do on that day. Even in the sources you have in the Mishnah, it's unclear what the significance of the day actually is. We'll discuss the day. It's a day which has taken on many different meanings, but it's a day of great joy on the Jewish calendar. And that's always, Tisha B'Av is the 9th, and Tu B'Av is the 15th. So it's following Tisha B'Av, we have Tu B'Av. Now what I want to discuss today is, what is Tu B'Av? What is this holiday called Tu B'Av, which really does not have much celebration? There's not much to do on Tu B'Av. We don't really have any customs as to how to observe Tu B'Av. It's on the calendar. It's known as a joyous day. It's discussed in the Mishnah, as I'll mention in a minute. It's a day where you skip Tachanun, which means it's supposed to be a joyous day. You skip the prayer of Tachanun. But what is it? What is the significance of that day? And it's a day that's supposed to give us hope, supposed to lead us towards our future. It's a day which comes in the wake of Tisha B'Av. It's supposed to lift us up and inspire us, and make us look towards the reconciliation with God and the rectification of all of our sins. So let's try to look at the sources as to what is Tu B'Av and understand some of its significance. So the source we find for Tu B'Av is the Mishnah. I'll read you the Mishnah. The Mishnah is the very end of Maseches Tanis. Now Tanis is the tractate of the Talmud, which discusses fasting, discusses tragedy, it discusses when we have drought, starvation. It discusses the fast days that the rabbis have instituted to remember the destruction of the temple. So it's not a very happy tractate. It's a tractate which discusses when one needs to fast, difficult times. But the very last Mishnah in this tractate gives us this joyous day of Tu B'Av. And the way it describes it is the following. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says, there were no days that were more, that were better or more joyous for the Jews than Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur. Now, if we were to ask, what's the most joyous day on the Jewish calendar? We might say Purim, some might say Pesach, maybe Simchas Torah, but Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur were the ones that the Mishnah chose. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel tells us Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur are the most joyous days on the Jewish calendar. The Gemara will have to figure out why that is. The Mishnah continues that on those days, the women of Jerusalem would go out wearing borrowed white clothing. Why they borrow the clothing? Because they don't want to embarrass the women who didn't have any clothing, or didn't have nice clothing. So they borrow clothing. Everyone borrowed clothing. So whether you're poor or rich, you'd borrow clothing so no one got embarrassed. So even if you're somebody who's poor and didn't have any nice clothes to wear, you'd borrow from someone else. And the wealthy ladies as well would borrow, because everyone borrows clothing on this day. No one should be ashamed of their clothing. So they'd go out into the vineyards, and they would dance. And the Gemara tells us this was a day where people would try to find their match, find their shidduch. The men would come out, the eligible men would come out, and the eligible women were in the field, and they would try to meet and try to make matches on the day of Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur, surprisingly. Those are the 2 days they would do this, on Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur. And they would, the women would say, the Mishnah says, young man, lift up your eyes, and look at all the ladies here. Don't look at beauty, look at family, or some would say look at the beauty, depending on what kind of woman the woman was, but they would try to bring out their great attributes, their great traits. And the Mishnah continues, and it says, this is alluded to in the verses in Proverbs, it says that you should, actually the verse in Shir Hashirim, the Song of Songs, it says, go out and see daughters of Zion, Melech Shlomo, King Solomon, with the crown that he has been crowned by his mother on the day of his wedding and on the day of his joy. The day of his wedding refers to when we receive the Torah, and the day of his joy refers to the building of the temple, which will be rebuilt speedily in our days. So that's the verse they use to allude to these 2 days on the calendar. And very interestingly, the day we receive the Torah is referring to Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur was the day where, after we had sinned with the golden calf and Moshe broke the first set of tablets, and Moshe brought down the second tablet on Yom Kippur. So it was really the culmination of the receiving of the Torah was on Yom Kippur, because that's when we actually walked away with the Ten Commandments. On Shavuos, we heard God speak. Moshe went up to the mountain for 40 days. He came back down and saw us worshiping the golden calf, and he smashed the tablets. We didn't receive the tablets until Yom Kippur. So Yom Kippur was a joyous day, a day of Matan Torah, a day of receiving the Torah itself. And then the day of the rebuilding of the temple, that actually is alluding to Tu B'Av, is what the commentaries point out. We should understand what that means exactly. But the day of Tu B'Av is referred to by the term Yom Simchas Libo, day of our joy, the day we rebuild the temple. So that's the source of the Mishnah. You have this interesting practice of the ladies going out and dancing in the fields, and you have this reference for Tu B'Av being a day of the rebuilding of the temple. And it's a very joyous day for all the Jews. So let's try to understand the joy of this day. So number one, the Gemara asked the question, why was Yom Kippur such a joyous day? I mean, for us, Yom Kippur is a very solemn day. It's a very significant, holy, special day. What makes it so joyous? And the Gemara says simply, why is it so joyous? Because God forgave us on that day. Initially, God forgave us for the sin of the golden calf and gave us the second tablet. And year after year, God forgave us for our sins on that day. Isn't it the most joyous occasion? You know, we have one day a year where even though we've done terrible things, God will give us forgiveness. That's a tremendous joy. Yom Kippur was a very joyous day on the calendar. But the Gemara is uncertain as to what is the joy of Tu B'Av. The Gemara actually asks the question, why is Tu B'Av such a joyous day? And the Gemara actually gives, I think it's 6 possibilities as to what is the joy of Tu B'Av. And we'll discuss those possibilities in a minute. But it's unclear, it's kind of a vague explanation as to what is the joy of Tu B'Av. So I'm going to look at it from a more general approach, and look at the specifics. I think the more general approach to Tu B'Av is the following. If we look at Tisha B'Av, and it is a day of terrible tragedy. So let's compare it to somebody who has buried a loved one. So when you bury a loved one, you begin sitting Shiva. You count the day of the burial as day 1. Day 2, day 3, day 4, day 5, day 6. On day 7, the custom is that you don't sit the entire day of Shiva. You get up on the 7th day. So if we look at Tisha B'Av as the day we've buried our dead, so when we actually get up from Shiva, it would be on Tu B'Av. Tisha B'Av is the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th. On the 15th day of the month, on Tu B'Av, we all rise from Shiva from Tisha B'Av. So it's a day that is designated as the ending of the morning period of Tisha B'Av, a day where we can get up from our Shiva, as it were. and look towards the future. And look towards, you know, we obviously we don't forget the past, but we have to rebuild. We have to be able to look towards the future and try to reconstruct our lives in a way that we can take that loss and move along with it and try to grow from it. That's how we view Tu B'Av. So first and foremost, Tu B'Av is a day where our Shiva of Tisha B'Av would end. That's first and foremost. But secondly, there's a broader perspective of Tu B'Av, and I'm actually quoting for you now from a great Jewish thinker, Rabbi Moshe Wolfson. He's a rabbi up in New York. He put out several books. He's a powerful speaker. And he writes the following. He says that we know that the rabbis, the prophets tell us, the prophet Zechariah tells us that all of the fast days will eventually be converted into days of joy and simcha. So there's four fast days, besides Yom Kippur, that's a separate discussion, but you have four fast days on the calendar which mark the destruction of the temple. The prophet Zechariah tells us that all of those days in the future will be days of joy, simcha. They'll be holidays. They won't be fasts, they'll be holidays. So of all those fast days, the most tragic, the most serious of those days is Tisha B'Av. And seemingly that day will become the greatest holiday. That will be a holiday of great joy, Tisha B'Av. So right now Tisha B'Av is a day of tragedy. But in the future, after we experience our final redemption, in the future, Tisha will become a great yontif. It'll be one of the most joyous days of the year. Now, what will we be celebrating on Tisha B'Av? So let's take the flip side of Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is a day. You're talking about a friend, right? Who just said? You're a friend recently, right? You're doing it. That's fine.
Sorry, I went to the JTC.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So Tisha B'Av is a day where we mark currently our exile and our destruction. So if Tisha B'Av is turned into a holiday in the future, what will it mark? Our final redemption. Right, it'll be the flip side of it. It'll be the day to mark our redemption. Now, currently, there's a holiday marking redemption, which is Pesach. Pesach is the holiday we mark our first redemption, our redemption from Egypt. Pesach is a seven-day festival, according to the Torah. And the seventh day, and the first day, are Yom Tov. The middle days are Chol Moed. So if we're to reconstruct a future holiday which mirrors Pesach, Pesach marking the original redemption, and its future holiday marking the final redemption, what will it look like? It'll be 7 days of a holiday, the first day being Tisha B'Av, and the last day being Tu B'Av. That's what it would be. And you have day one being a Yom Tov, day seven being Yom Tov, and you have intermediary days, Chol Moed, like you do on Pesach itself. So the holiday of Tu B'Av is actually a semblance of a future holiday. It's a holiday right now, we don't really celebrate, not much to do in Tu B'Av. It's on the calendar, it has a little meaning, there's a little joy within it, but something which is kind of reflecting back at us from the future. And in the future, Tu B'Av will be a Yom Tov. There'll be Tisha B'Av Yom Tov as well. And this will be the future holiday of redemption, very similar to Pesach, and you'll have a day one, day seven of that holiday, just like Pesach has day one and day seven as well. So that's how we do Tu B'Av on a broader scale. So the day which is supposed to mark Geula, redemption, it's the reconciliation between us and God, it's a reunification of the Jewish people, it's a day of brotherhood. It's a day where in the future we'll celebrate all those things which have caused our tragedy and destruction over the years will be fixed. They'll be repaired. We'll celebrate unity. We'll celebrate devotion to God. We'll celebrate connection with God. We'll celebrate the rebuilding of the temple. It'll be a day of celebration. That's in the future. Currently, we don't have that quite yet. You know, we're still in exile. There's no temple rebuilt.
Well, we might get it by
Thursday. We might. Yeah, maybe this year we will celebrate that. Right. That's true. You know, we don't want to mark off this year yet as another year of mourning. But it's a day where which will be a holiday to promote the rebuilding of the temple, to celebrate final redemption, to celebrate ourselves relinking with God and reunifying as a people. That's what it'll be. It'll be the final day, the culmination. Just like when it comes to Pesach. No, the redemption began on day one. Day one of Pesach is the night where God killed the firstborn of the Egyptians and we left Egypt. But we don't look at there as the redemption ending at that point, because day seven of Pesach marks the splitting of the sea, where Jews crossed over the sea and killed the Egyptians off. So at that, we're still in limbo. The first 6 days of Pesach, even though we left Egypt, Pharaoh was still chasing us. We were still in mortal danger. Only on day seven, when God split the sea and killed the Egyptians, were we actually freed. So Tu B'Av as well act as a culmination of the final redemption, the culmination, the final celebration of God redeeming us in the future will be celebrated on Tu B'Av. So based on that, it makes a lot of sense why today to promote marriage. The people would go out and find their matches. Because we always look at the relationship of God and the Jewish people as like a man-woman relationship, a husband and wife. And husbands and wives, at times they're close, at times, you know, unfortunately, they split. And, you know, God, in a sense, has split from us over the years. We've been forced into exile, thrown out of our house, and we've been wandering. But we will reunify with God as well. So Tu B'Av is a day that celebrates when we come back together with God once again. So naturally, it makes sense today where we should actually try to bring Jews together. We try to bring a man and woman together as God comes together with us, and when God redeems us. Yom Kippur as well. Yom Kippur was grouped together with Tu B'Av as another day where they actually used to go out and try to make matches. Because Yom Kippur as well, Yom Kippur is a day where we've sinned, we've become distant from God. On Yom Kippur, God forgives us, and we reunite with God once again. So anytime you have a day, which is a day of unification, a day where we come back together with God, and that's on the spiritual level. On the physical level, we try to promote men and women getting together as well, because that's kind of the physical expression of that relationship we have with God. So it kind of mirrors the spiritual realm we have in the physical realm. In the spiritual realm, the Jews are once again uniting with God. And on the physical realm, we try to make shidduchim, and we try to make matches between people. And that's how those 2 days kind of play out on a deeper level. Right now, it's we look at it kind of as a minor holiday, because we haven't experienced that final unification yet, the final redemption, the intimacy with God. In the future, it'll blossom into an incredible major religious event, a major holiday, because once we actually experience the final redemption, we'll appreciate the joy of Tu B'Av, we'll appreciate what the day is all about. So that's the broader perspective of Tu B'Av. And we always have to understand that you have the spiritual metaphor and the physical expression. The spiritual metaphor is God and the Jews coming together. It's like it says, the book of Shir Hashirim, Song of Songs. It's an entire book of the Tanakh that's all a metaphor for God and the Jewish people. If you read the book, you just translate it, it looks like a love story. There's a man and a woman, they're together, they're apart, they search each other, they embrace, that's how it looks. It looks like a love story. But it's a very, very deep book of the Tanakh, and that's all a metaphor for the relationship between God and the Jews. That's what it is. Rabbi Akiva referred to the Song of Songs. He says, all the books of Tanakh are holy. The Song of Songs is holy of holies. Because that actually expresses the deepest intimacy between God and the Jew. And that's why it's holy of holies. So Tu B'Av is a day where we have that connection with God that's supposed to be remade, recreated. And that's a day where we try to create it amongst men and women as well in this world, kind of as a parallel and the metaphor for the spiritual realm. That's the broader perspective of Tu B'Av. Now, what I'm doing now is that the Gemara, though, asks the question, why is Tu B'Av so joyous? Why is Tu B'Av so joyous? And the Gemara, which is dealing with the here and now, not with the future, is trying to find reasons we celebrate even nowadays. I mean, in the future, we've just explained it'll be this great holiday of redemption, of intimacy between us and God. That's in the future. But how come right now, even when the Jews are sitting in exile, even when God is apparently distant from us, why is it such a joyous day? So the Gemara actually gives 6 possibilities as to what makes Tu B'Av so joyous. So we'll try to explain them one by one and understand a little bit of how they relate to the concept that we're discussing. So the first answer the Gemara gives is that it says that Tu B'Av was the day, this is according to the great Rabbi Shmuel, he says that this is the day where the tribes were allowed to marry one another. In the Parsha a few weeks ago, in Parsha Maseh. So in the end of Maseh, the tribe of Manasseh came with a complaint to Moshe. Because in Parsha a few weeks earlier, in Parsha's Pinchas, there were the daughters of Tzlafchad. The daughters of Tzlafchad came to claim the inheritance of their father. Until that point, only men received inheritance, and they were upset. We have no brothers. Our father, unfortunately, has passed away. Why should we lose our tribal inheritance? It should come to us, to the girls. And Moshe said, good point. Let me talk to God about this one. He speaks to God, and God says, they're right. You know, the daughters of Tzlafchad are right. They're making a great point, and they should get the inheritance. So, great. You know, and that's what God says. That's what Moshe says, and they will inherit the tribal land of their father. A few parshas later, the people of the tribe of Manasseh, which was the tribe where Tzlafchad came from, had a complaint. They said, what's going to happen now? These girls are going to inherit the tribal land. they're going to go and marry into other tribes, and we're going to lose our tribal land. So the one daughter of Sapphira will marry into the tribe of Yehuda, one will marry the tribe of Reuben, one will marry the tribe of Shimon, and all that land will then end up within those tribes, and we lost from the inheritance of Manasseh. And they're upset about it. So Moshe said again, okay, good point, let's check this one out. And Moshe says, you guys are right as well. The daughters of Sapphira can inherit the land, but they have to stay married within their own tribe. That's what was said. And in that first generation, as the Jews entered into Israel, the tribes had to remain, the women of the tribes had to remain in their own tribe. That was the law in the very beginning of the
so
conquest.
Even though the Pesach way talks about the daughters of Sapphira, it applied to...
Right, it seems to be all any situation like the daughters of Sapphira, where the women had inherited land, had to stay within their own tribe. But the Gemara tells us that only applied to the first generation in Israel. After that generation, the women were allowed to marry whoever they wanted to marry. And that, so the prohibition was lifted on Tu B'Av, that's what Gemara says. So on Tu B'Av was a day where all the tribes were given permission to marry one another. And no more did certain women have to stay within their own tribe. And that's considered a day of joy. It opened up more possibilities for Shiduchim. It created more of a unity amongst the Jewish people. It's considered a day of joy. That was the first reason the Gemara gives for the joy of Tu B'Av. Now there's a second related reason. The second reason happened later on in history, in the book of Judges. And that discusses the tribe of Benjamin. There is a terrible, terrible story which occurred in the end of the book of Judges, where there was a murder committed, and it was a civil war. Very, if you look at it, I think the last two chapters or so of the book of Judges, very terrible story. And the perpetrators were the tribe of Benjamin. They were the perpetrators. So all the other tribes took an oath that we're not going to allow our daughters to marry into your tribe. And I don't think the men would take the daughters of Benjamin either. So essentially, no one's marrying to Benjamin at that point. Most of the tribe was actually killed off during that civil war. They had very few members left, and they couldn't marry into the rest of Israel. So at that point, they're basically sentenced to dwindle out and die for lack of marriage partners. And it was a very terrible time for the Jewish people, but yet, the rest of the tribes felt that Benjamin had done such a terrible crime, they had to be punished in this manner. However, this prohibition also was lifted a little while later, on Tu B'Av. On Tu B'Av. So we have two marriage prohibitions that were lifted on Tu B'Av, meaning that, again, the theme of Tu B'Av is a day of coming together, of unity, of reconciliation, and it makes sense that these marriage prohibitions were lifted on Tu B'Av. So on Tu B'Av, I don't know the year, but Tu B'Av, several years later, the tribe of Benjamin could marry into the other tribes at that point, and also on Tu B'Av, after the Jews entered into the land of Israel, the next generation, all the tribes can marry one another. So the day, again, of unity and of coming together, that's how the day was viewed. That's how the day is, even nowadays. So the first two reasons the Gemara gives. The Gemara gives a third reason, and another related reason in terms of Tisha B'Av. We know that Tisha B'Av was the very first tragedy of Tisha B'Av in the Torah, was the day that the spies returned from Israel and gave the evil report about the land of Israel. That was the night where the Jews all went back to their tents and they cried that we can't enter into the land, God can't save us. We're going to be killed out in the desert. And that sin was why God declared that none of the Jews of that generation could enter into Israel. So on that very first Tisha B'Av, God made a decree that none of the Jews who left Egypt could enter Israel besides Kalev and Yeshua, the two spies who came back with positive reports. Everyone else had to die in the desert.
Well, about 20,
right? It was between 20 and 60, yeah, right. So what happened was, Rashi explains here in the Gemara, quoting from other sources, that every year on Tisha B'Av in the desert, the Jews would essentially dig their own graves. They knew they were dying that day. They dig their own graves, they lie down to go to sleep in their graves that night. And in the morning, many would wake up, and many would not wake up, because that's how God killed off that generation. On the final year, the 40th year in the desert, so they went through this practice, they laid down on Tisha B'Av in their graves, they all woke up the next morning, nobody died. So they figured, oh, maybe we're off a day on the calendar. You know, the moon is still not a full moon. You know, maybe we counted wrong. So the next night again, they lay in their graves, nobody died. They tried this again, and again, and again, and again. When they get to Tu B'Av, the 15th of the month, where it's a full moon, they know we didn't miss the day. They know we certainly laid in our graves on Tisha B'Av, because now it's a full moon. We know it's the middle of the month, and we're all still alive. So that was the day where the decree of God to kill off a generation ended. And all those who remained on Tu B'Av were able to enter into the land of Israel. So that was a very joyous day in Jewish history because that now prepared us to enter into Israel. That was the day where the terrible decree ended and we were able to then enter the land.
How many of them actually survived? Of the ones between 20 and 60, is there any kind of count?
I'm not sure. But what's interesting about that as well, the Gemara tells us, is that during all those years when the Jews were being killed on Tisha B'Av, even Moshe and God didn't have the same relationship. We know that Moshe spoke to God in a very, very direct, intimate manner, but during the years when the Jews were being punished for the sin of the spies, Moshe received communication, but not in the same way as before. It didn't have the same intimacy, it didn't have the same direct, you know, link to God that Moshe had during those first years. But also in the final year, once they all died out, and God was ready to take us into the land of Israel, Moshe then received that communication once again. So Moshe's level was lifted up unto Bav as well, and he was able to speak to God as he did before, as he did prior to the sin of the spies. So that's another joyous event of Tubav. Now the way that plays into the theme that we're discussing here is that we see the results, the results of the sin of Tisha B'Av, that those results were ended at Tubav. Tisha B'Av, the very first Tisha B'Av, God declared you're all going to die in the desert. On Tuba'av, the decree was lifted. So Tuba'av is the day where we look past Tisha B'Av. We say Tisha B'Av, what was. It was a terrible thing that we did. God punished us. But on Tuba'av, God says, okay, now I'm accepting you. We're going to again reunify, come back together. You're ready to enter into the land of Israel. I'll claim you again as my beloved nation. And now we can move on together. That's what God says. So Tuba'av was a day where essentially the effects of the sins of Tisha B'Av were ended. So that's the third answer. That's the third reason that the Gemara tells us for celebrating Tu B'Av. There's a fourth reason. This is another story, another tragic story in Jewish history. We know that in the times of the Jewish kings, so after King Solomon, King Shlomo, the nation split. Shlomo's son Rehoboam took over part of the nation, and somebody else, Yerovam ben Nevat, became the king over the rest of the tribes. This is the split of the 10 tribes versus the other tribes. You have the kingdom of Israel, the kingdom of Judah. The kingdom of Israel was known throughout all its history to be a very, very terrible place. They had put up guards, and nobody was allowed to leave this kingdom and go to the temple. They had erected these idols that all the Jews in the kingdom of Israel were supposed to go and pray to. And this happened beginning in the times of Yeravam and carried on through most of the history of the kingdom of Israel. They were actually sent off to exile, I think about 150 years or so before the kingdom of Judah was by the Assyrians, and it was looked at as the 10 tribes in the kingdom of Israel were much more rebellious, and they were much more they much more flaunted God's will and despised the prophets more so than the Jews in the kingdom of Judah. So, and there was a terrible aspect again with the king Yeravam erecting these idols and putting up the guards to stop the Jews from going from Israel into Judah. On Tu B'Av, several hundred years later, after Yeravam put these guards there and erected these idols, one of the later kings of the kingdom of Israel, his name was Hoshea ben Ela. Hoshea ben Ela, he actually removed the guards. And he said, okay, I'm leaving the idols over here, but if you choose to, you're allowed to go to the temple and serve God. So it was a good gesture. It did not necessarily save his kingdom. But he allowed the Jews in Israel to actually go to Judah and go to the temple. And that was actually a major event in history, and that was a day of joy, because it allowed the Jews in Israel to, again, reconcile with God. Many of those Jews did actually escape from the exile of the kingdom of Israel by entering into Judah after that point. So nowadays, we talk about 10 lost tribes, and the majority of those tribes were lost. But it doesn't mean there's not a single member of those tribes amongst us, because many of the people of those tribes did enter into Judah and were saved from the exile. So we do have that nowadays as well. But that was a day of joy. That was a day where this King Hoshea removed the guards. And that was one of the ideas of Tuba. But again, it's another day of unity. The Jews joined together as one. It was a split of kingdoms, but it was a day where the kingdoms could once again come back together and reunite. The fifth reason given, and this one I want to spend a little more time on, not much time left, a little more time on, there's another interesting story that happened much later on. This happened after the destruction of the Second Temple. This is the famous story of the destruction of the city of Betar. The Mishnah tells us that there are five events which occurred on Tisha B'Av, at least until the Mishnah's times. More have happened after that. But until the Mishnah's times, there are five events recorded on Tisha B'Av. Number one being the sin of the spies. 2 and 3 being the destruction of both temples. Number 4 being the destruction of the city of Beit. Number 4 actually is listed was the Roman general Turnus Rufus. He plowed over the Temple Mount. So any remnant we had of the temple on Temple Mount was plowed over by Turnus Rufus. And the fifth event recorded was the destruction of Beitar. Beitar was an enormous city that seems like hundreds of thousands of Jews lived in that city. It became a fortress during a rebellion. And we'll just go through that story very quickly. After the destruction of the temple in the year 70 CE, so many Jews still remained in Israel under Roman rule. They weren't allowed in Jerusalem, but they could still remain in the land of Israel. They still had a Sanhedrin in the city of Yavne, and they still had, you know, somewhat of a semblance of a Jewish community. They actually rebelled against Rome during those years, probably 2 or 3 times. And the first 2 rebellions, I think, were squashed on the spot. But there's a 3rd rebellion which the Jews waged against Rome, which actually succeeded for a while. Oh, please, thank you.
Very good.
I took some thing from there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, thank you very much. Very dry today. This is the famous rebellion of Bar Kokhba. Bar Kokhba was somebody who was considered a great scholar and a great warrior. He had the support of the great rabbis. Rabbi Akiva supported him. Rabbi Akiva actually felt that he was the Mashiach. And Rabbi Akiva saw a glimmer of hope in Bar Kokhba. He thought that Bar Kokhba, thank you very much, Bar Kokhba would be able to rebuild the temple and bring us back to how things were before. So the rebellion actually succeeded for a while. For 2.5 years, Bar Kokhba had his own autonomous kingdom. They took back Jerusalem. We even actually have coins that were minted during that time. Archaeologists have found Bar Kokhba coins. Actually, I have pictures of them here. This is it. That's from Rabbi Wein's history book. He has pictures of the coins in Bar Kokhba. I think they have them in the Israel Museum. Different museums have them. But for 2.5 years, they actually had an autonomous kingdom in Jerusalem led by Bar Kokhba. The Romans were not very happy about this. So the Romans sent a much larger army to fight. The Romans took back Jerusalem, and the Jews all retreated into the city called Beitar. Eventually, the Romans came to conquer Beitar as well. They killed all the Jews who remained in Beitar, which could, again, numbered hundreds of thousands of Jews. It seems like a tremendous number of people were killed in Beitar. A very terrible incident. Bar Kokhba was killed, and the hopes which we had that Bar Kokhba could bring us back, rebuild the temple, and become our leader, become Mashiach, were lost. You can imagine the Jews at the time, they'd experienced the destruction of the temple only 60 years before, and they finally see a glimmer of hope. Not only was he a great person, Bar Kokhba, he was supported by all the great rabbis, or many of them at least, and he succeeded for a while. And they thought, finally, the end is here. The end of our bitter exile has come. This is about the year 130 or so, by the way. About the year 130 CE. And he actually succeeded for 2.5 years, and then it all fell apart. Everybody was let down. Everybody was depressed. Was despaired. The way that the Rambam over here describes the fall of Bar Kokhba, let me find it here. He says that the fall of the city of Beitar, the end of this rebellion, was equivalent to the destruction of the temple itself. I mean, the Jews had such high hopes that they really thought that they had made it, that this was it. Finally, the exile was over, and all this came crashing down before them. And that was the destruction of Beitar and the death of Bar Kokhba. So how does that relate to Tu B'Av? So the Talmud tells us that the Romans, in their cruelty, would not allow us to bury the dead in Beitar. And they left hundreds of thousands of Jewish bodies just strewn about on the streets of Beitar for a long period of time. Finally, on Tu B'Av, I'm not sure of the year, but on Tu B'Av, several years later, they let us back into the city. And a great miracle had happened, that none of the bodies decomposed. They were all as fresh as they were the day they had died. And the Jews were expecting to see the worst. You know, years and years of all the bodies in the streets would have been terrible. It was terrible disrespect to these people. But they came into the city, God made a tremendous miracle, and all the bodies were still fresh and intact as they were on the day they had died. So that was a great joy which happened on Tu B'Av. Now what's the message of that? So it's very interesting. We actually remember this miracle very, very often without realizing it. Because when we say the blessing after eating bread, the Berachas HaMazon, there's actually 4 blessings in there. And the 4th blessing we make, the one that begins, like Elavinu Malkinu Adireinu Boreinu, the 4th blessing, that was instituted to mark the miracle of these bodies not decomposing. The bracha is referred to as Atov V'Ametiv, the one who is good and does good. And that bracha was actually composed and put into the benching as gratitude towards God for allowing us to bury the dead and not having these bodies decomposed. So we actually remember this miracle very often in our daily lives, not realizing it. That's the miracle of Beitar. Now, what's the message? Why did the rabbis feel it was something to include in benching? Why did they feel it was appropriate to remember this miracle every single day? So one reason is because it shows us never to despair. You think, you know, God has left you, God has punished you. We've all been killed, 100,000 Jews have been killed. The temple was in ruins. Any hope we have of coming back seems to have been destroyed. After that rebellion, we couldn't rebel anymore. You know, at that point, the Romans said, forget about it. You know, their strong hand came upon us. Eventually, we were scattered off amongst all the nations. And never again to go back to Israel, really, until recent times. So we thought everything was lost. Everything was gone. But God says, no, you should know I'm still with you. You think everything is lost. You think you should despair. That you should have no more hope. But look, even though you deserve punishment, and you're going to be sent to exile, but see this miracle I did for you? Hundreds of thousands of bodies sitting in the hot Israeli sun for several years, fresh as they were the day they passed away. And that's something to really remember every single day as we go through difficulties in life, to know that as much as we feel despair, as we feel that God has left us, God is still there. We don't know what God's waiting for in order to bring us all the way back to Israel, but we know God is there with us. And that's part of the miracle of the of Tu B'Av, associated with the fall of Beitar. Now the second time we actually say the bracha of Atov V'Meitiv as well, we refer to Atov V'Meitiv, the one who is good and does good. So we also say that bracha, it's a little known situation, but we normally make a bracha on wine of Bripri HaGafen. That's probably the most famous bracha out there, Bripri HaGafen. But many don't know that you're sitting at a meal drinking wine and you didn't finish your bottle yet, and somebody unbeknownst to you brings in a new bottle of wine that's actually a better quality of bottle, and you want to take a drink of the new bottle, you actually make the bracha, bracha ta Hashem, okinim lachum atov v'ametiv. God is good and does good. Make that bracha. You know, the situation is specific and limited. It doesn't often occur. There's actually a lot of qualifications as to when that bracha should be said. But the rabbis made a bracha, same bracha, atov v'ametiv, for drinking extra wine. Higher quality, better wine in a meal. And we have to know, like, what's the connection exactly. So commentaries explain that this is actually taking it from the opposite end. That as you're about to indulge in extra, better wine, you can't forget about the day of death. You can't forget not to lose yourself in what you're doing. You have to be in control. So we say the bracha d'meitiv, and we actually recall the dead of Beitar to remind us of our end. But yet, when we eat bread and we bench, we recall the dead of Beitar to remind us of God's goodness towards us. So you kind of have, you know, both sides of the coin in recalling the dead of Beitar. It's a fascinating story. But the Tu B'Av was the day that we were able to enter into Beitar, bury the dead, and we found this miracle that we had to perform. And we had a tremendous joy seeing, you know, not only we could bury these particular dead, but understanding that God was with us even in the most difficult of times. So that's part of the joy of Tu B'Av. To put it in a bigger perspective, again, Tisha B'Av, we're all in mourning. We dwell upon all the loss and the tragedy. And we're bound to despair. We say, God has forsaken us, God's left us, how can we deal with it? We don't know how to move on. Tu B'Av comes and tells us, look, even though the people in Beitar had been massacred, but God performed a miracle for them, because God's still there. And after Tisha B'Av, our goal is to realize that God has been with us through it all. And even all these tragedies that have occurred have all been under God's watch, and in the kindness of God to some degree. In some way we don't understand, but it's all the kindness of God. And Tu B'Av is a day to dwell upon that, that even though there was a massacre which occurred, there was a miracle which occurred in the wake of that massacre. And even though Tisha B'Av is a day where we have to recall tragedy, we have to understand that miracles occur in the wake of tragedies. The tragedies are there to build up, to create a greater situation, a better situation. That's why tragedies are there. And Tu B'Av's day is to reflect on that and move on. So one more point about Tu B'Av. The sixth and final answer that the Gemara gives us as to the joy of Tu B'Av, the Gemara says something which seems to be kind of random, does not relate to the rest of it. The Gemara says that on Tu B'Av, it was the day in the year the Jews would stop chopping wood for the temple. Meaning there was the Kohanim had to chop wood for the temple, and they had to make sure that the altar was always stocked up with wood. And the rabbis described to us the ceremony of bringing the wood, and it was a joyous ceremony of the mitzvah. You know, you're bringing wood for the altar. You're burning the sacrifice to the God with this wood. But they only want to use the finest quality wood that burned very well. And during the heat of the summer, in under the sun, the driest wood was the best wood to use. The Gemara tells us on Tu B'Av, I guess in the land of Israel, on Tu B'Av, it was a time where they would stop chopping the wood because the sun was no longer at its peak of the summer. I guess, you know, you're past kind of like the solstice, and like, you know, things started, I guess, getting a little bit cooler. Maybe not here, but that's how you see it on the calendar. And therefore, they would finish their wood chopping ceremonies for the year on Tu B'Av. Now, why was that so joyous? So commentaries explain that the Kohanim then had more time to study Torah now. When they're busy chopping wood, they couldn't study as much Torah. Once they can stop chopping wood, they have more time in their day. So what do you do with your time in your day? You study more Torah. That was a day of great joy for the Kohanim, because they got to serve God through the study of Torah. Now, how can we relate this to the rest of the description of Tu B'Av? I'm not really sure. But I would suggest that if we're talking about uniting with God, connection, reconciliation, the way that we unite with God in the deepest way is through Torah study. When we study God's Torah, understand God's wisdom, and try to use it to apply it to our life, that's the way in which a Jew brings God into his or herself. And that's one of the greatest ways to unify with God is the Torah study. So the fact that Kohanim had more time to study Torah because they stopped chopping the wood on Tu B'Av, that gave them great joy because they're able to connect with God in a much deeper way during that time of year. So those are the six different reasons the Gemara gives for Tu B'Av. Again, I think that the broader perspective is Tu B'Av is a day that we celebrate the final redemption. We celebrate the antithesis of Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av was exile and destruction, and Tu B'Av is a day where we get past all that. We get up from our Shiva, we look towards the future, we hope for the final redemption, and in the future we'll celebrate Tu B'Av as a great festival, a festival of redemption as well. All the different points the Gemara makes, they're all instances of joy. They relate to the bigger concept. But overall, it's a day where we should focus on unifying with each other and unifying with God. On a practical level, it was seen as a day of making shidduchim, of making matches. Nowadays, there are those who promote that as well in Tu B'Av. You do find different events like that in Tu B'Av as well, which is certainly appropriate. You know, definitely, any time we can have events like that is always positive, and certainly in Tu B'Av, it's positive. But on a deeper spiritual level, it's a day where we're supposed to reunify with God after the destruction. It's a day where we seem to have split from God. There's been a rift in our relationship. And Tu B'Av is a day to pick ourselves up, be consoled, and come back again to reunite with God. It gives us, it's a day of hope, it's a day where we should have warm feelings, a day of anticipation of the future, a day where we kind of can propel ourselves into a greater connection to God, a more intimate connection with our Creator. Many, many commentaries describe the progression of the days, going from Tisha B'Av, Tu B'Av, to Elul, to Rosh Hashanah, to Yom Kippur, to Sukkot. It's all a process. The Jewish calendar is always a process. And after you've hit rock bottom with Tisha B'Av, the only place to go now is up. Tu B'Av is a day where we get that inspiration, we get the wherewithal to push ourselves up. Elul is time we repent. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, we God forgives us, we accept God as our King, He forgives us. In Sukkot, we once again reunite, as if we're going back into God's house once again in Sukkot. That's how you view that progression. But it all begins when you hit rock bottom in Tisha B'Av. Once you hit rock bottom, the only place to go is upwards. And that's how we view it. So Tu B'Av, again, practically there's not much observance to it. You would skip Tachanun is all you do in prayers, and that's about all you have in terms of observance. But I appreciate it as a day that we should be able to look at it as a day of positive anticipation of the future. That's where the power of Tu B'Av. Any questions? Thank you, Phil.